Okay, we asked you early, huh? We still got 12 more minutes to go. So in the meantime, you got any question or anything you want to discuss, we can make use of the time. Otherwise, you can just relax, silent your mind.
Last Sunday, we going to visit this pagoda and the meditation center in Sumeru, just outside Meru. It's a very nice place. So we are trying to make collection for our donation to that center, and we'll be going back to present the donation to them on first Saturday of September. Right, so we'll probably start early in the morning. I think we'll fix the time. What time we start here? So early, yeah. Okay, we meet here at 7:15, and then we go there. We'll probably arrive at about 7:45, and then we sit until about probably 9 or 9 something. Then we'll have a brunch. Big center.
We will also have a tour of that place. It's a very unique, I don't know what to call it. I think it's a weird place. So this particular visit was also meant to be. The condition arise. Then one of our Thursday class, Kayanamita, Michael Lu and the wife. I think he knows the owner, Brother Lim. So they were very kind. So they asked Brother Suyan whether I would be interested in visiting that place or not with the Kayanamita. So when they mentioned it, I knew. I said, okay, we go. Because there was another Kayanamita who came and also, I think, meditate under our sharing. He also benefited a lot. Then he used to tell me, he used to go for self-retreat at this center. He called it Sumeru. So this particular place, he said, is very, very calm. Very still, very conducive for meditation. And he liked to go there. He go there very often while he was still working. And even after he retired, then the brothers also go there. I think the brother came to our class too. He used to sit here. So when he told me about that, I think about 2-3 years ago, I just make a note. I said, it's okay, Sadhu. And he said he got only 2 lay teachers. One of them is Brother Lim, that owner, and the other one is me. I said, sadhu to you. You got very good teachers. So he indirectly explained to me many things about that place. Then he said, my teaching and his teaching very similar. Then he some more say he learned a lot. He rejoiced. So because of that, I say I rejoice with you too. So we just let it be. Normally for my nature, I can sense the sign. When something happens, the first sign will come. And normally the first sign, I don't do anything. I wait for subsequent sign. Then that request, when it was made, I straight away knew something is meant to be. So I told Brother Suyan, I said, yeah, we go. Then when Michael Lu came and talked to me, actually he was from Alastair, my schoolmate, same year. Then I said, it's okay, we will go, it's a good place. I heard about you before. Then he told me, yeah, Brother Lim also heard about you. So I also heard about you. So that's how it came about. Then when it happened, on that morning, when we went, when we reached that place, before that, you know, that place is like quite remote. Then you never expect such a beautiful and nicely built like a monastery. It's even better than monastery. Can be in the middle of nowhere there. And this one come about through a single person, his hard work, his passion, and his belief. Of course, he got a lot of, I think, assistance too. People who willing to help him and other things. But mainly it's through his own individual effort. That's why we rejoice. And for such a person who have such parami, it's not easy to come by. That place is very quiet, very peaceful, a lot of stillness energy, very conducive for settling down your mind. You can meditate there very easily. If there also you cannot meditate, there is no place you can meditate really, I tell you. So he has a lot of this, what they call, parami to do this type of thing and offer that place to serious cultivator. He doesn't open it up, he low profile. So because of affinity, we went. Then we were very surprised actually, the visit was very beautiful. It turned out to be like a lot of things meant to be. Then we also came to know about another project in Ulu Selangor, near Kajang there. They are building another way place. Hulu Langat, sorry. Not Hulu Selangor. Hulu Langat. Ulu Selangor is KKB, sorry. This one is Hulu Langat, yeah, which is near Kajang. So it's now 50% completed, that place. Then, according to the one of the owner, he told Brother Suyan, when it's completed, beginning of next year, the place has been booked until the following year. Already fully booked. So that shows there are a lot of people who are interested in retreat and building this type of way place. So we rejoice. So Suyan took the contact address too. Then when we were there, we met a lot of those clan group, actually Kayanamita, who came to our class too. Then I met one Sister Lian Jin, who almost 20 years I haven't met, last time MU Buddhist Society, together with me from there. So all these were the conditions. And Brother Lim was very good. He get somebody to took us around, the one Brother Kam, then Michael Lo. And within that place, this is Michael Lo. You all should thank him, Sadhu, for introducing us to Sumeru. So what we did was, we have a tour of the place. Then they have very beautiful, what they call, stupa. They were almost 100% completed. The one up there almost 100% completed. Also, only the staircase, the other ancillary work, which is about 1-2%. So it was a very beautiful stupa, energy very good. Then Maitreya was there, the image. Then we have this Kuan Yin place, where the pool, the fish are so alive, so beautiful, water is so clear, and the energy is so good. Then with the Heart Sutta at the side. Then they got a Naga pond. Then they also got meditation center, shrine hall. The very big one is in the process of completing. When we were there, I think about 70-80% completed. It's a very big place, very beautiful. The shrine hall is bigger than SJVA one. You can just imagine how big. Then they got two sections, Theravada and Mahayana. Then they got these dormitories. They got all these buildings. Everything done up very well. So you go there, you will like that place. Then you can rejoice. Then somehow they were conditioned. Before we complete our visit, we went to one last building. Suddenly, all of a sudden things just happened. And he asked me to look at one Buddha image, Buddha Rupang. It's a solid carving. I don't know whether it's in granite or marble, or whether it's white jade. I also not sure. I didn't check. But it's beautiful. Because the moment I went in, I saw, I already felt. I said, meant to be beautiful Rupang. Then straight away he also received something. He straight away offered it to me. He said, this rupang will be offered to you. I say, sadhu. I say, thank you. I say, wait. So I was looking for Suyan. Because about a month ago, I had this intention to look for a rupang to be put here. Actually, last year at our gathering of Kayanamita, the once a year annual gathering, you all Kayanamita fan make me an offering, a Buddha rupang with the light and everything. But it's made of fiberglass and hollow. So actually, I had the intention, I told Sister Mimi and Joyce, I will offer to Brother Suyan and Mifong so that here you got a proper rupang. Then later, my nature told me, it's empty. It cannot hold the type of energy that we have here. So it will defeat the purpose. So I just let it be. Then about a month ago, I had this intention to really look for one. Then all of a sudden, this condition arise. Then out of the blue, that image came. And this image already have very good energy inside there. The stillness energy, the silent energy. But what it lack is wisdom energy, which we have here. That's why it will actually complement it and become very beautiful. So because he was so sincere and everything was done with so much joy, so I told Brother Suyan, we will make an offering. So our Kayanamita Fund, we have decided to donate 5,000 to the Way Place. And this is the biggest donation from Kayanamita Fund. Because the good news was, Suyan suddenly told me, but you know, Kayanamita Fund got a lot of money now. I say, how come a lot of money? I say, $5, $10. He said, no. He said, I got 10,000. With the sales of the Rupang, the poster, he got 11,000. Wow, I said, like that we can do more things. Wow, immediately we donate 5,000. Then I said, for the good of the many, I will top it up to 10,000. Then for you all, any amount will do. You all should rejoice because we are donating to that Way Place because of condition. Understand? Not because exchange. No, because of condition. So meant to be. And he has this, what they call parami, to do this type of work. We should rejoice in what he do. He is also beautiful in his own way. So he has his own understanding. He do things his way, which is very beautiful too, and very beneficial to many. If you have a condition to go there and meditate, you will know. Straight away you will know. Anybody who is serious, go there, they will know. The moment you're silent, your mind is that stillness energy will come. When you have faith in all those, they got a few images. They got Sakyamuni. They even got what, Shiva, is it? Lord Shiva. So that place is quite unique. They even got this, what they call Naga Pond on the Naga there. So it's a very special place. The land shape also very beautiful, and the stupa was right in the middle down there. Very good energy. And he also has a lot of relics. He got teacher from Burma. He used to go to Burma and he received a lot of relics. That was what I was told. So we should all rejoice. We say sadhu three times. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So things that are meant to be will be. No need to like pray for it or want for it. No need. Meant to be will be. And this image, later on, once it's here, when it's charged up, actually we already got a small one here. This one, but our capacity too big. Not enough. And for you all, so many Kayanamita, small guy like that, not easy to support you all. So that one will become very good size. But this one, don't put somewhere else, put here. This one is a very good one. It has been here for the last 5 over years since I came here and share. So all these have their condition. And you only need, remember, you only need to be sincere. Develop the faith, then silence your mind. You will draw, you will tap, then you make aspiration. you will progress very fast. Then after that Rupangkam, we will have an official enshrinement ceremony. We will choose a date for their sake because they prefer it to be a proper date. So dates are important for most people because it can also bring about good condition for that day. But if you develop the understanding or the cultivation, your own karma is more important than any of the auspicious day. Because you don't wait for auspicious day to be successful or to reap the benefit of auspicious energy. When you have the Dhamma, when your nature is with the cultivation, when you have already developed your karmic nature, your spiritual nature, every day is auspicious to you. You don't have to wait for a particular day to be auspicious. So these are just understanding. Doesn't mean that you throw away auspicious. No. You only can afford to do that when you have cultivated, when you have developed your nature. Otherwise, you better look for auspicious day to install things. Otherwise, you can get into trouble, I tell you. So whatever it is, don't attach. Don't become superstitious. Until the thought project fear you. Are you, I didn't do properly, I choose a wrong day. Then you panic. Not like that. The reality is, done already means done. You're sincere, you don't have to worry. Okay? Yes. I know this one's separate. Cannot, because it's the neighbor. You cannot, haven't even checked with them. You cannot do this sort of thing. Like last time I used to tell people, the neighbor got cancer for sale. But you cannot like that, oh, my neighbor, I must help. Then the thought is involved. And whether he wants help or not, we don't know. Then, of course, he said, he's chanting. I was like, but I need to talk to Li Hun. I need to get more understanding. It's not that like all the what, Ta Chai, when you got some problem, you come, brother, till Thursday class, we do blessing. Then it become like blessing ceremony. There must be condition for things to happen. When we want to do this, there must be condition. That's why sometimes Kayanamita come, like their mother, their brothers, they got faith, they already have the what they call understanding of what we share here. And then it's different. Then we will try to do something. Otherwise, it's not effective. It's of not much point to. And people must be willing. They must want this. Oh, come. We haven't started that. Don't worry. So with that, we can start. So we will do the puja. So compose your mind, develop your sadha, your virya, the faith, and the spiritual tenacity. Then we pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha. Those who can see this poster of Lord Buddha, you pay respect this direction. For us, we will go that direction because we are used to that rupang. And it's easy for me. I just do it. So now we start our puja, okay? Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sabba sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sabba sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sabba sambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu micchacara viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Suramiraya majjhapamadatana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha. Relax yourself, then maintain some form of attention. Then we can start our meditation. Oh, there's one new one. You are first time here? Oh, okay, good. Means you, I need to give you that 12 September transcript. 12 September. That 12 September. And the understanding of training of the mind. You read through the 12 September transcript, all about meditation is there, so that you don't have to like wait for my instruction to do the meditation. Whatever you're not sure, you can ask question after that, or report your meditation and ask question after that. This is the safest time because we only got 2 hours. So we need to meditate for about 40 minutes or 45 minutes. Then we are left with Q&A. Maybe take one question. So 1 hour is gone. Then left with another hour for Dhamma sharing. So in order to save a bit of time, I don't need to waste time on instruction. But never mind. Since most of you already know how to meditate, so we will do the usual one. I will often like. Then after that, those who know how to meditate, you straight away can start. Okay? Okay. Then for those who are new, and those who still need some instruction, so that you know how to train this mind to develop the meditation, I will give you some simple guideline. So basically what we are doing here is we are here to train our mind to be aware. The moment we are aware, we need to stabilize it. After we stabilize it, it can be used to meditate, and that is called heedfulness, apamana. Mindfulness is sati. Sati need to be stabilized, otherwise it's of not much use. So the training of the mind to be aware is very important. Then when it's already aware, we need to stabilize it so that it can be used to develop the wisdom or meditation as taught by the Buddha. When you combine these two, you become heedful. So like the Buddha's advice to all monks, Dhammapada verse 21, he said, heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. Whereas heedlessness is the path to the deed. The heedless eye is if deed. So without training your mind to be aware, leading to heedfulness, the Buddha said, you are as if dead, means spiritually you are dead. There is no spiritual life for you. So the danger of heedlessness is obvious. That's why in all meditation we are here to train our mind to develop this mindfulness leading to heedfulness. And all of the methods and techniques are skillful means to train the mind. So you can use any method, any technique or any object of meditation that you are familiar with. Initially, for those who still need to train the mind, I will teach you a skillful means. We use the mind sweeping method to decondition your heedless thinking, so that after that you will be relaxed, peaceful. Then we combine with metta to develop inner well-being. So inner well-being and inner peace are very useful mind state for developing the meditation. Then after that, we will use anapanasati to train the mind. If you got your own object of meditation, you can use it. The object of meditation is to anchor your mind so that it is aware of that object, so that the mind does not wander off and become heedless. So anapanasati is using the breathing in and out breath to train the mind to have mindfulness on it, so that when you are mindful, you develop calmness, tranquility, stillness. Then there is no thought. That's why you are very peaceful, very calm. And the key to meditation is relax, body and mind completely relax. So now I will give you instruction to do the mind sweeping method to decondition your heedless thinking. Make sure you have a stable posture. Make sure your backbone is straight. Then relax body and mind. Completely relax and silent. Close your eye and feel. Feel your forehead. Don't think. Wherever there is any tension, any tightness or any stress within, you just silence your mind and relax. Relax and relax. Feel it soothingly, relax. Then you move on to your eye muscle, do the same. Feel them. Don't think, feel. Any tension, any tightness, any stress within, just relax, relax and relax. Then you sweep it down to your facial muscle. Slowly sweep it down. Every aspect of your facial muscle, just feel it and relax the tension within. Any stress, any tension, any unhappiness, just relax, relax and relax. Feel yourself soothingly relax. Then we can adopt a skillful means to bring about relaxation if you find it difficult. You visualize yourself facing a mirror, radiating a radiant smile. If you can radiate this radiant smile, means you have joy, you have happiness within. The mind that has joy and happiness is very relaxed, stress-free. So the radiant smile is very important. It will do away with all your unhappiness and your tension, and it will make you relax naturally. So radiate this radiant smile. Have joy. Then after that, combine with metta to bring about inner well-being. You can read it following what I read it. May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. You must feel the well-being and happiness within your own body and mind, your entire being, feel it. Then you can repeat it one or two more times. May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. May it too be free from all harm and danger, free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. May my mind state too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May it keep itself happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within our hearts. Then you can radiate this same metta to all beings within this vicinity, your loved ones, all Kayanamitas, Dhamma friends. May all beings within the vicinity of this place, known and unknown, seen and unseen, all of Kayanamitas, Dhamma friends, and even your own loved ones, may they all too be well and happy, well and happy, free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then we move on to all beings within the whole of Subangjaya, Selangor State, Malaysia, Southeast Asia, Asia, then our Mother Earth planet. Then all beings within the whole solar system, our galaxy, then all beings throughout the entire existence. May they all to be well and happy, well and happy. May they all to be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. May they all to be free from harm and danger. May their mind states to be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. By now you should be more calm and more peaceful, and you come back to your facial muscle, feel it soothingly relaxed, silent. Then you sweep it down to your neck, feel, relax, shoulder, feel, relax. Hand, back to shoulder, feel, relax. Then you move it to your heart area or your chest area. This is the most important location within your body. This is where your heartbeat arises and passes away. This is where the seat of consciousness is. This is also where the life force arises and passes away. So you silence your mind completely and just feel. If you can detect any vibration or your heartbeat, you just stay there, silent everything. Just relax, maintain silence and peace. If you are new, you are not sensitive, then you just feel, like you feel your forehead, you feel your chest area, your heart. Feel it soothingly, relax, relax every part. Then you move it to your stomach, feel. Relax, move it to your abdomen, feel, relax, buttock, do the same, feel, relax, your leg, do the same, feel and relax. As you feel and relax, you don't think. So you are starting to decondition your mind from the heedless thinking. Then because you are able to maintain this mind sweeping method, you are also training the mind to be at the location you want to be. You want it to be at the forehead, it stay there. You want it to be at your heart, it stay there. You want it to be at your abdomen, it stay there. So this is to train your mind so that it listen to you, so that you have the ability to make use of it for whatever wholesomeness that you need. Then you can also make use of this trained mind to develop the meditation. So now that you have this ability and you're more calm and more peaceful, you should learn how to stabilize this silent mind, which is in fact sati, mindfulness. When you are silent without thought, you are already mindful. So don't try to be mindful. Just silent, relax. Then you are naturally aware. So What we need to do is now to stabilize this mindfulness that we have developed, the silent mind. So what we do is, as per the Buddha's advice in the four foundation of mindfulness, Satipatthana, the first foundation, Kayanapassana, the first category of cultivation is Anapanasati. Anapana is in and out breath, sati is mindfulness. So Anapanasati is mindfulness of in and out breath. So you do the same. Instead of feeling your forehead, you feel your breathing in front of your nostril. You just silence everything and feel. Then the moment the mind detect the breathing, you allow it to flow together. The mind and the breath as one, without thought. Just like what the Buddha explained. He said, under Anapanasati, breathing in, the mind is aware. Means mind and breath move as one. Then breathing out, the mind is aware without thought. So this training is very useful. Initially, if you are new, you are not what they call stable yet, then this mindfulness cannot develop. Your mind will slip away very fast. Split second, you become heedless. But don't worry. Maintain patience. Every time this mindfulness, the attention wanders off from the breathing, you make a mental intention to bring it back. So you consciously bring the awareness or sati back to the breathing and detect it. If you are patient enough, after a while, this training will stabilize. Then Anapanasati will develop. Then mindfulness or this in and out breath will become something very simple, very natural. Then the moment you are able to do that, you will develop some form of spiritual faculties. The most obvious one is what they call sati, mindfulness. Yeah. Then after that, you continue to relax and allow the sati to be. This sati will accumulate into a type of peace, a type of silence, which we call piti. Piti is a jhanic factor, is also an enlightenment factor. It's a very beautiful state. You will feel the mind undergoing peace. Then there is something like spiritual calmness leading to spiritual joy or rapture, they call it. So piti will make you very calm, very peaceful, and you will like to meditate. The mind state is very different as compared to the heedless, very what they call restless type of thinking mind. This one is very peaceful, very quiet, very still, very silent. Then there is a lot of joy, spiritual joy within. Then as you continue to relax and silent, this piti will become more and more refined until sukha arises. Sukha is spiritual bliss. The mind state becomes very blissful, and you will feel that not only joy, that subtle, fine bliss within your mind state. And sometimes the blissfulness can be very intense. As sukha is not a spiritual faculty, it's also not an enlightenment faculty. So you should beware of it, not to attach and cling on to this state, not to want it repeated every time you sit for meditation, even though it's very soothing, very peaceful and very blissful. So you continue to silent, relax and allow this sukha to transform. Then you will move on to a state we call pasati. Pasati is tranquility of mind, stillness of mind, the silent mind, the meditative mind. So you continue to relax and silent. Then your breathing or whatever object of meditation you do, it will slow down automatically until it becomes very, very subtle, like there is no more breathing. So during that time, pasati, when developed, is very beautiful, very useful. This is the meditative mind. But you must always remember, when pasati develops, you are not supposed to hold on to it. You are supposed to just allow it to be, so that this sparsity will become very, very refined. And when you can develop that, it will become a much, much more refined state of sati. Because sparsity is stillness of mind, tranquility mind. The mind has got no thought, no movement, it's just very still, silent mind. And this one, you don't need anything to anchor it. But initially, because you are not stable, you may need something to anchor it. So you may still continue to be aware of your object of meditation, even though very subtle. You continue to relax, silent, and feel the breathing. Just silent and feel. Later on, you will detect this breathing again. The subtle breathing will come back. Then when you can do that, your mind is actually already in sati. You don't have to do anything else. You can actually drop the object of meditation. The mind that is in sati do not need anything to anchor or dwell on. Then after that, you can just silence your mind. You can feel any part within your body. It becomes like magnified, very sensitive. Then you feel your heart stay there. Without the stethoscope, you can feel your heartbeat. You can feel any vibration within your own body and mind. All of your contact between body and whatever. Even at night when you sleep. Whatever part against the pillow and the bed, you will feel them when you silent. They are very, very gross initially, the vibration. Then later they become more and more fine, more and more fine, and more subtle. Then your mind enter paucity. Paucity is the meditative mind, silent mind, still mind. So meditation is to train your mind to realize paucity, the silent mind, and use it to meditate. Okay, I will stop here. So that you can continue to train your mind. And for those who already trained, you no need to do it anymore. Just silent. And with the silent mind, be aware of all the arising of consciousness from your senses. Just relax and silent. General spacious awareness that is aware of the whole totality within and without. All of the various mind door, the sixth sense door. Then all of your activity of mind, aggregates of mind, then all of the Dhamma that the Buddha taught, you will come to realize them through the silent mind. You will come to be aware fully of what is going on, and you understand how you function as a human being and what is this form of mind all about. Okay, I will ring the bell in about 15 minutes time. Okay. Just relax your body and mind. Maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness that you have developed. Our purpose of meditation here is to train this mind until the mindfulness is very stable. Then you need to maintain this trained mind in the state of awareness throughout the day while you live your life. Because the real meditation is the daily mindfulness. In the midst of life, you must be heedful, means constantly aware, ever mindful. Then use it to live life, to cultivate wisdom. We are cultivating the Noble Eightfold Path, or the meditation as taught by the Buddha. So with these two combined, sati stabilized, used to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, that is heedfulness, apamada. And if throughout the day you can live life that way, very soon you will develop the wisdom, and very fast you will progress along the path of Dhamma. So the only difficult part you need to spend time on is to understand the essential teachings of the Buddha. Why is your mind not peaceful, and how to train this mind? Then after you have trained, it's very easy. Just stabilize it. Yeah. The stabilizing of it can come in many forms. Anapanasati is only one of the way. Some use chanting. You recall to mind Buddha Nusati, or Dhamma Nusati, Sangha Nusati, means contemplation of the great virtue of Lord Buddha. Then contemplation of the Dhamma, salutation to the Dhamma, so that you understand clearly who the Buddha is, the nine great virtue, and what the Dhamma is all about, so that when you cultivate, you don't go astray. Then you understand what the Aryan Sangha is all about. These are the triple gems where you can develop the Dhamma understanding. Any of these triple gems, the Dhamma will be there. And we truly understand how beautiful each of these gems is. It will help you a lot in the cultivation. Then after that, you can reflect and contemplate on the dead. Marana Nusati. After that, you develop the four foundation of mindfulness to stabilize your cultivation, so that the awareness and mindfulness can allow you to see clearly how you function as a human being in daily life, how your disformed mind arise and pass away. The whole of the teaching actually center on the five aggregate of form and mind. The first noble truth, final summary, the Buddha described. In short, it is tuned to living beings' delusion, the conditioned one to grasp and cling onto this fire aggregate of form and mind that I call suffering, the Buddha said. So in order to understand the final summary, you need to do certain inquiry, reflection and contemplation into what the Buddha said. Why did the Buddha said, in short, all of my suffering come from my own delusion that conditioned me to grasp and cling onto this by aggregate of form and mind as the me and the I? How does sakayadity come to be? So when you inquire, then you can go deep into the Dhamma. So the first inquiry is, why did the Buddha say that? Then you like got the message. This is the secret of cultivation, because all of suffering come from this. So the next question is, how can I understand it? Then after that, in order to understand, you must know what it is, isn't it? So you ask the question, what is this so-called five aggregate of form and mind that the Buddha talked about? So now we review last week, last Thursday. You see on the whiteboard, I will go through it quickly. Now I have written the second part, the second aspect of the five aggregate of form and mind. where this 5 year of forming mind is very important, you cannot understand. No amount of meditation can bring you any proper result or real understanding. So now I'll go. So in meditation, you look at this whiteboard. These are the two essential Dhamma that the Buddha constantly remind the Sangha or the disciple. He said, the first category of Dhamma talks about mental hindrance. These are the mind state that hinders your mind from becoming peaceful and calm. That's why you cannot meditate. You cannot become calm and peaceful. You become heedless. You think a lot. You worry a lot. Your mind becomes restless. So you react a lot to sense experience. So all the five sense, what they call states or mental states, that condition your suffering comes from this mental hindrance. And what are they? If you look at it, you will know. Sensual desire and ill will are your like and dislike, pleasant and pleasant reaction to sense experience. Every day, throughout the day, you do it. So if you have that throughout the day, means the hindrance are very powerful. That's why it hinders you from becoming peaceful. That's why you are heedless. You cannot be heedful. You cannot be mindful. You cannot be aware. You cannot be silent. Then sleepiness, of course, you know, when you are sleepy, sloth and torpor, lethargic mind, sleepy mind. That mind is unconscious. That mind is not alert, not aware, cannot live in the sana. They call it the lazy mind. That's why it's sleepy, tired, restless. So restlessness is the fourth hindrance. Why is it restless, your mind? Because throughout the day you think so much. So your mind got no chance to rest, no chance to stop thinking. And why do you think? Because you are deluded. You got ignorant. That's why dependent origination, the dwelling, avijja paccaya sankhara. Due to ignorance, you arise activity of mind, thinking, sankhara. So the more you think, the more restless you become. Asana. You don't think, no problem, very peaceful. When you think, problems start. Asana. So all the first noble truth, reality, manifests. Then when you have doubt, you're not sure. These are the hindrances that will make you very, very heedless and very negative. And this is how suffering comes to be. So the Buddha said, what you need to train is the opposite five, the spiritual faculty. When you develop this five, it will overcome the hindrance and your mind become different. Because a living being that has trained the mind and has this spiritual faculty, you are the most beautiful being. The enlightened one have this spiritual faculty cultivated until so stable it become power, spiritual balas. You heard of the word balas in our notes. When your faith and confidence in the Buddha and yourself become so stable and so strong, your mind is very calm, very composed. Because of that, you got no more restlessness, you got no more doubt. Okay, so these two hindrances will go. Then when you understand who the Buddha is, how beautiful his teaching is, and how wonderful a great being he is. Not only he is enlightened, but he is the fully enlightened one, complete in wisdom and virtue. He is like the wisest and the most virtuous living being ever to be born. So because of that, it will drive you to strive on with a lot of tenacity or spiritual zeal, which is the second spiritual faculty, so that you determine to train your mind to walk this way, to learn his teaching, so that you can become like him, enlightened. And when you also come to know how beautiful his teaching is, how it can bring about enlightenment, end of all suffering. So that is the motivation. That's why it brings forth the second spiritual faculty or spiritual zeal or tenacity to cultivate, to walk this way. And when you have that, you are not sleepy, sloth and torpor no more. Your mind is very, very determined. has a lot of what they call determination, tenacity, spiritual zeal or tenacity to move. Then because of that, you will cultivate. And when you cultivate, you train your mind, like what you do here in the form of meditation, to develop sati or mindfulness. Sati is mindfulness. Mindfulness is awareness before the knowing. Before you know, there is no thought. You're just silent, aware. So when you can train your mind to be aware of breathing, aware of any phenomena, it will just be silent without thought. That's why you will become very peaceful, very quiet. And because of that, you don't have thought, there will be no sensual desire and ill will. The mind will become very peaceful. So the hindrance are more or less no more. Then when mindfulness stabilizes, it becomes collected and unwavering. That is the state of samadhi. You need samadhi because when you live life in the midst of living or doing your daily chores while you work or while you do certain things in life, driving, whatever that you need to carry out your daily activity or career. So the mind constantly experiences sense object, sense data, and upon contact, it will trigger off the respective consciousness. So every time when you live life, you have to see things, hear things, smell, taste, tactile feeling thing. These six senses are very active. So every moment of sense experience, you don't have samadhi. What happened to you? What happened to you? Yeah. Your mind will waver, isn't it? And why does it waver? Because you don't have samadhi. So initially, you will stir and react according to your emotion, your wrong view, or your fear, your insecurity, your like and your dislike. So that's why this one, without samadhi, because wisdom has yet to come, the last spiritual faculty. So without that, you rely on samadhi. So that when you see things, if your mind doesn't waver, it's collected and unified, means you can see things as they are, understand? Not as a conditioned state, understand? Not what your thought tell you, understand? Not what all your conditioning tell you, you know? Your perception of that thing is all from your conditioning, your idea, your thought, your views, and your opinion of that person or that thing. If you do that, you cannot understand truth. You cannot see things as they are. You can only see things as they are, your mind is silent, not wavering. That's why sati and samadhi will allow you to see things as they are, exactly how it happened. That's why the silent mind will understand. It will awaken to that phenomena, the characteristics, everything, the three characteristics of impermanence, suffering state, and non-self. Then when you see them clearly, you will understand how you function as a human being, how your mind stir, what other thing that caused it to stir. Then you will trace back to your sixth sense, then your wrong view, your sakkayadity, everything. This is what satipatthana is, the four foundation under dhammanupassana. Mindfulness of the six internal sense bases and the six external sense bases, triggering of the 18 sense line. Then you trace the origination factor, then retrospectively reverse it. Then the third way, you silence your mind. So when you do this, wisdom will arise. And when the spiritual faculty is there, you are so beautiful. You are always mindful. You always collected your mind, unified, unwavering. Then wisdom is there. You will know how to act. You will know how to live. You will know how to respond. Never through the thought. It's all direct seeing. Spontaneous. Every moment, every instant, you just know what to do. Because of the wisdom, the intelligence, the understanding. So spiritual faculty will take over. From heedless, you become heedful. Then your mind will most of the time be silent, mentally silent. Silent means no internal chattering, no thinking. You're just aware. The two types of awareness will manifest. General spacious awareness and specific phenomenal awareness when you live life. Then after that, you will comprehend the Four Noble Truths very clearly, very easily. Then after that, you go and reflect, contemplate. You will start to understand why the Buddha defined all of suffering under the final summary as the attachment to the five aggregate of form and mind, upadana kandas, that he called dukkha or suffering. So all this center back to the question I asked. You have to know what is this five aggregate of form and mind. Otherwise, you cannot put to test what the Buddha said. Correct not? Correct not? Well, his final summary is like that. It's an attachment to this five aggregate. And what are they? You don't even know what are they, how you put to test. That's why when you don't understand this five aggregate of form and mind, you cannot understand his teaching. You cannot understand the three universal characteristics of anicchang, dukkang, anatta. Under Anatta Lakana Sutta, after he delivered his Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the first sermon, you remember, to the five ascetic, that time only Kondanya became a Sotapan, remember? The other four still not enlightened yet. Then what happened when he spoke the second sutta, Anatta Lakana, the sutta on anatta, non-self, or empty nature? All the five become Arahan, remember? That's why they penetrate this five aggregate of form and mind. And the Buddha, through the sutta, one by one, he actually teach the five ascetic. And when they awaken to it, they became Arahant straight away. So these five aggregate of form and mind, you need to understand what they are. So the Buddha said, as a human being, as a human being, you have a physical body there, physical form or physical body, okay? Agree or not? Then you have a mind or a consciousness trapped inside this physical body. Agree or not? He said these two combine five aggregate of form and mind. First aspect means, first aspect is as a human being. Understand not? Where you have a physical form and you have a mind that has four more aggregate. The Buddha said if you want to understand what are these mind aggregate, it's very easy. You just question, what can my mind do? Then all these four will come out. And there's a reason why the Buddha actually specifically summarized them as these four aggregate. The first one is feeling. Is it your mind can feel? Rana, what does you feel? What can you feel? What? Sadness, emotion. That is also part of feeling. What else? Hot or cold, you can feel with that. Correct? You touch the environment. Whether it's hot or cold, you can feel with that. Then all the sensation that arise within your tactile, you can feel with that. Itchiness, pain, all this you can feel with that. That's why the mind has this ability to feel. And he called it Vedana in Pali. So this is the aggregate, is it? You must understand. Our mind is capable of arising feeling. Okay? Then what else can your mind do? How do you know my voice? How do you know that this is a Buddha Rupang? How do you know? You perceive it, isn't it? Through your seeing consciousness. You heard my voice through your hearing consciousness. Understand not? When you become conscious, you can perceive. That the mind has this ability, because through memory, through learning, through conditioning, you are taught all this. So perception is another great aggregate of mind. The Buddha said, the mind has the ability to know things, to perceive through the senses. Anything you see, hear, smell, taste, tactile feel or think, you can perceive. Seeing consciousness, you can perceive color, shape, and form. Understand not? That's why Buddha Rupang, whiteboard, everything within your visual perception. Then hearing, you can perceive what? All of the vibration, music, sound, speech. All these are your mind's ability to perceive them. Then when you eat something, what do you perceive? The food, the taste, isn't it? Curry, sweet, sour. Chili is hot. Then what else? cold, they're hot, whether the drink is cold or hot. Then all of taste, you can perceive, understand not? Then smell is another one, whether pleasant or unpleasant smell, pungent or very soothing, understand not? Or sometimes you may smell what they call perfume. Then many of these sense experience that come by. Then your body can perceive all the tactile imprint, understand not? Like people poke you, understand not? Or you harm your bodily part. Then you can perceive that tactile type of consciousness. Yeah. Then sometimes like you got some form of what they call discomfort somewhere. You can perceive, understand not? The nerve will activate. Yeah. So through your consciousness, you become conscious of that part. Especially when you become old, rheumatism, or even what they call internal bodily pain and all things, you start to feel them. Then you start to feel your own heart, your own organ, all starting to weaken. Yeah? They are not as before. Yeah? So as you age, you start to know that all of your senses start to fail you. They are not as before. Yeah? And you can perceive them. Yeah? Then after that, what else can your mind do? Throughout the day, you use a lot. Yeah? You think a lot. The Buddha called it sankhara. Sankhara is mental activity. Thinking is the number one. Yeah. But it also includes all of your perception and feeling. Yeah. That's why sankhara is everything that your mind can do. Your thinking, your planning, your scheming, your mental state, your mental intention. All of your, what they call, cunningness. Yeah. Yeah. All these are part of sankhara. Understand? Everything that your mind can do, including feeling and perception. Then, after that, there is another part which the Buddha said, you can become conscious of things. So consciousness is the fourth aggregate. Yeah. So, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, and Vijnana, these are the Pali equivalent term of feeling, perception, activity of mind, and consciousness. Activity of mind include mental formation, mental states, mental images, mental intention, everything. So all the English words are not enough to describe, because this is everything that your mind can do. So the Buddha said, you attach and cling to any of this physical body form or mind state, you suffer. Yeah. The last one, consciousness, you know, you are capable of consciousness. You can become conscious of what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. So this one clear or not? Why agree? First aspect. So now we put to test. If you attach to your physical body form, do you suffer or not? Obviously you know. First number two, birth is suffering. With birth come what? Old age, sickness and death. If you think this body is you attach, what happens? You worry about it, getting old, getting sick, and die. That's why the first noble truth, first form reality is birth leading to old age, sickness, and death. If you don't have wisdom, you attach, you deludedly cling. That's why I put that the egoic mind, atta. Understand that? If you attach and cling to this physical body, thinking that it's you will become miserable. You will be afflicted. Then you will suffer. Understand that? You complain a lot, isn't it, when you grow old. Yeah? Your senses start to fail you. Then sometimes you want to commit suicide. I'm so useless. Such burden to my own kid and children. I sometimes they're so angry that I'm no bloody use at all. So your mind state are affected by the body. Like just now I tried to explain to Sister Lian. Huh? Very good. She went through one aspect of sickness, the eye. Huh? I think got pressure, then she went through two operations. And now she very happy because she almost fully recovered. The pressure already gone, then she can now like start to see things again. So before that how many months? 2 months. It was not easy. That's why I say that is a condition for you to really, really understand the Dhamma. Because the Buddha under the second turning, What did the Buddha say? First noble truth, second turning. What did the Buddha say? This noble truth of suffering is to be. The second turning of the first noble truth. This noble truth of suffering is to be. No, suffering is to be understood. Wow, all the note go away. You never read. And when you understand, you no need to remember one asana. Because the first turning, proclamation of truth. Then the second turning, first noble truth is about suffering. You have to understand what is suffering. Otherwise, you suffer without knowing what is suffering. So this noble truth of dukkha is to be understood. So one of the eight conditions is disease or sickness. Okay? Birth, old age, sickness or disease. So when she experienced that, that is where you tell yourself, instead of becoming miserable and complain and complain and complain, last time I can read, now I can't even read. I got so much problem and so much pain and I suffer so much. Who say all these things? The thought, the ego, the atta through the aggregate, the attached to this physical body. That's why you become miserable. But if you have the Dhamma, you need not suffer, like the Buddha said, third noble truth. Suffering need not be. You will know how to reflect and contemplate. This is not me. Why? Not theory, you know. True understanding, you know. The physical body is what? Element only. The four elements. And you know, without the consciousness, it can never be you. That's why after you die, they do autopsy, you got no feeling. You don't go and complain anymore. Wow, you cut my body. Very painful. Your consciousness gone, no more feeling, no more pain. And that one is element. Element returns to element. So what happens is, if you develop wisdom, then you will know, body not me. Okay? And then you meditate and understand that this aggregate of mind, like the Buddha under Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, he said, likewise like the physical body, the Buddha said, is it permanent? Of course, they know it decay. Correct? It becomes old and finally it dies. Impermanent. Things that are impermanent, is it pleasurable or is it painful? Painful. That's why it brings about suffering. So he said, things that are impermanent and brings about suffering, is it a permanent, eternal, unchanging entity that you can cling on to and hold on to and say, this is me, this is I, and this can be mine. You can understand, no? Because it's impermanent, it will go the way of nature, just element. Then, apart from that, it is painful, as it transforms and changes, old age, sickness, and death is painful. So, how can something that is impermanent and painful, you call that this is me, this is I, it's foolish, isn't it? Because this thing doesn't belong to you, only element. Then when you understand this, that's why they reply to the Buddha. He said, the body is impermanent, the body brings about pain, suffering. Then the body is non-self. Then after that, he repeat for feeling. He said, what is feeling? Is it permanent or impermanent? And when you meditate, when you silence your mind, you will know that feeling keep on arising and passing away with every moment of consciousness. Then when you through the silent mind realize that feeling come and go. Come and go means what? Impermanent, it never stay the same. Then pleasant feeling can transform to become unpleasant feeling when condition change. Then if feeling come and go, then how can you so foolishly cling on to feeling and say this is my feeling? Feeling is me. Because if it can be that way, then when pleasant feeling pass away, you should die with it, isn't it? But how come you didn't die? That shows you have to investigate what feeling is. Understand? What is feeling? Feeling is not intrinsic. Originally never inside you, understand? Without consciousness, without contact, without the sense basis, feeling never arises. Understand? we are feeling is aggregate of mind, condition arising. Because it's condition arising, that's why it's not you, understand? Dependent on condition, it arises, naturally arises. Like your seeing consciousness, your activity of mind, your perception, feeling is the same. They are all dependent arising, condition arising, dependent originating. So when you start to see them, you realize that they are all impermanent. They bring about suffering when you want them to be eternally like that. Understand? But it is not going to stay there. It depends on condition. Cease to be, it will cease to be. Then you call it real and unreal according to your senses that actually dictate what you believe in. Understand? Whatever you cannot hear the vibration, you say don't exist. True or not? But for certain animal, the dog, they can hear very high pitch vibration. Then the bats, all those things, they are different. So to them, the vibration exists. But because our senses are limited, we can only hear until certain frequency. Below that, we cannot hear. So exist or don't exist depend on whether your senses can perceive it or not. That's why you cannot see ghosts and you don't believe there is ghosts. But you got a lot of fear. A ghost does exist. That cannot see doesn't mean it don't exist. Because you have limited capability of your senses. So when you develop understanding, what the Buddha wants you to understand is, this physical body, if you understand it's not you, this aggregate of mind, you understand it's not you, then don't be deluded, don't attach, don't cling. Otherwise you suffer, just like this form. Understand? So now we move on to feeling. If I attach to feeling, does it bring about suffering? Definitely. Because you like pleasant feeling, you don't like unpleasant feeling. But the world is always never the same. When condition change, feeling also change. When you have relationship problem, when you have stress, when you have work problem, career problem, health problem, financial problem, it brings about what? Suffering is there. Correct or not? Because you feel it as a problem in there. Correct or not? When you have relationship problem, you got very angry and unhappy because your loved one want to separate from you, understand or not? Or your boyfriend, girlfriend doesn't want you anymore. They don't want to maintain the relationship. Or your good friend suddenly don't want to talk to you anymore because of some misunderstanding. Or your own brothers and sisters, your own parents, you cannot get along. So you develop suffering through feeling. You feel for them initially, you love them, you develop attachment. Then when conditions change, love become hate. Love become fear, insecurity, unhappiness. So all this, all of feeling got three, pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral feeling. Even neutral feeling bring about suffering. Because it's ignorant. Whatever that arises, if it's pleasant, you attach, you cling, you like it, you want it repeated. When you cannot get what you want, what happens? You become afflicted in there. Correct? So, feeling you cannot attach. You must understand, feeling is before the pleasant and unpleasant. Understand? Before the like and dislike. Before the stirring of mind, before the reaction of mind. That's why the Buddha said, feeling is not a problem. It's only when you attach to feeling, upadana kanda, then it becomes a problem. Understand? That's why good food can eat. Understand? But you don't attach. Don't become miserable when there is no condition. You also want, means you want things your way. You cannot understand nature. So feeling, that's why the enlightened one, all their aggregates are pure aggregate, non-grasping. Understand? They still have feeling like you. Understand? But they are non-grasping because of their wisdom, their understanding. They are not deluded by it. They know these are condition arising, causal phenomena. That's why it's impermanent. Whatever that is impermanent, you cannot hold on to it, cling on to it. It goes the way of nature. Understand? If you attach, cling, and hold, you have craving for it, you attach and grasp onto it, then it becomes a problem. Then suffering will arise. So this feeling part, You can go and try it. Every time you sit meditation, what happened to you? Before we understand the true Dhamma, you always look for good meditation. Correct or not? Calm, peaceful, special experience. Then you sit. My meditation very good today. Then you commit to memory. That pity, that bliss, that special meditation. Suddenly you become so calm, so peaceful. Then what happened? The next time you sit, you cannot get. Then the thought, the memory recall. Then what you do? You got this craving, attachment. You want it repeated. So what you do? You try very hard to get it repeated. The problem is the moment you try, your hindrance of mind arise. Understand not? There is craving. There is sensual desire. So that hindrance prevents you from becoming peaceful. Understand not? That's why you can never get it repeated. Understand not? Unless you really let things be, you just silent and just do. Or then it will come back again. But whether it come back or it don't come back, you have to be very focused. That's why meditation has to be done with understanding. You meditate for what? Not to develop only the peace, the inner peace and inner well-being. These are byproducts of meditation, which are good state. But that is not the focus, understand? The focus is what? To train your mind, understand? If you have not trained your mind, which you all have gone through before, let's say, every time you meditate, you become very calm, very peaceful. Your mind state fantastic. You're fully aware. Wow, you in the retreat, you walk around fully mindful. Does it bring about any benefit? Of course, during those moments, you say very beautiful, good meditation. But you attach, it become a problem. Understand? When you go back to daily life, you cannot get it repeated. So when you confront problem situation, you think of going to retreat. That's why you run to retreat. Then you come out square one again. But the whole of meditation is to develop the wisdom to awaken. Not to meditate for calm, peace, and energy field. Understand? To have psychic and all those abilities. But you still don't know who you are, what you are. Understand? That's why the Buddha's meditation or teaching is very different. It's not about all those things. It's about understanding who you are, what you are. What is this fire aggregate of form and mind? What is this human being all about? Why the Buddha say it's not you? So we have gone through, physically, you know, it's not you. Then mental, also, it's not you. But when the two combine, why you still say it's not you? Because the Buddha said, the human being, the first aspect is still anatta, non-self. So now you know, body not you, mind not you. So what are you? Who are you? Huh? What are you? Who are you? Okay, maybe. Oh, still got time, huh? So I can finish all this one very well. Okay, to make it simple. You cannot deny that you are a human being, correct? Right? Yeah? Where is the human being? Huh? Human being, huh? Where is the red pen? Don't have red, huh? Never mind. You cannot deny this is you, huh? Okay? Everybody say, I am so and so. I'm a human being, isn't it? So, we try to find out who are you. What is this so-called human being all about? Huh? What is this so-called human being all about? You cannot deny you have a physical form, physical body. You have mind, okay? So now you know, briefly, the five aggregate. This is what you are. Okay? Now we start. Is the body really you? Just now I already explained that. The Buddha also explained that. They are made of 32 parts, 4 elements. No knowing, cannot be you. Understand not? Okay? Okay. Because when you die, devoid of consciousness, this form goes the way of nature. That's why it's impermanent. It's never you. Then now we come back to the mind. Is the mind really you? Yeah. Forget about the explanation of anatta lakkhana first. You put away all the Dhamma. You think and reflect, contemplate to your own understanding. Is the mind really me? You say no, you shake your head because the Dhamma says so, another. But I want you to explain to me why you say this is not me, the mind. Because it's a combination of mind and the body there. So how do you understand it? It's just like the analogy I used to give you, okay? The car and the driver. Yeah? You can see clearly the driver is the driver in there. The car is the car in there. So this body is like a vehicle, you know. You use it to move around, correct? Who drives this body? The mind is there. The mental intention is there. So you know the mind is the mind. The car is the car. So the car cannot be the driver, is it? Correct? These two are different, is it? But how come when consciousness is trapped inside, you cannot see? You think you. Understand? I. Everything I. Understand? But it is the mind. That's why the Buddha said the mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is cheap. When mind arises, everything comes to be. So this one direct. Understand? When you want to walk, you walk. Understand? That's why this one stand up. That's why you got mental intention. Understand? Then you got mental intention to do certain things. That's why this one can act, can speak, can arise thought, understand? Through the senses. So what happened is, the mind is the forerunner of all things, mind direct. Okay? So we have to give importance to the mind. That's why meditation is all about mind, understanding this mind. And then we will understand who we are, what we are. So the driver in the car analogy, you ask yourself one question. If this driver is heedless, what does it do? Huh? He couldn't care less, is that? Because it's very selfish. Yeah. Heedless person is very selfish, very emotional. Traffic light, red light also want to cross on. Then want to argue. Huh? Want to become emotional, everything. So if this driver is heedless, this car is going to be in trouble. Correct or not? Everywhere he will make mistakes. He will bang here, bang there. He couldn't care less. So the human being is the same. You don't take care of mind, your karma will be affected. This is like the driver, heedless, simply do things. You know what he do. Because of pleasure, he go and abuse himself. He go and drink. He go and try all sorts of funny things. Then he harm himself, harm the body, create mental suffering through all the heedlessness, through the evil root, through the hindrance of mind. That's why if you don't take care of mind, it's like that driver simply drive this car around, understand? Very selfish, very heedless. All the evil roots are there, very emotional. Got accident, also want to argue, fight, die very easily, understand? So if you understand that, you try to avoid that, understand? That's why train the mind. Develop heedfulness, be aware, so that you understand how you get into trouble, then you can avoid them. So the teaching is about this. But then you have to understand that this mind is not you. So how can you understand that? Because you have been using this mind for so long, you take it for granted. You say, brother, this human being is me. It has been with me for so long. I want to laugh, I can laugh in there. I want to walk, I walk, I want to run, I run, is it? I can do whatever I want with this form, understand? So you look at the car, it's the same, is it? The driver want to go fast, he can also go fast, is it? Want to make a U-turn or whatever, whatever that is allowable by the car, he can develop the maneuver, is it? So ability to control that car doesn't mean that the car belongs to the driver, understand? The car and the driver are separate entity, understand? So the mind is the same. Ability to control this form doesn't mean it's you, understand? You say, why you say not me? I want to eat, I eat. I want to laugh, I laugh. I want to do anything I can. I want to commit suicide also can. Why you say not me? So when you meet with people like that, how you answer? It becomes like very convincing, isn't it? Oh, correct, huh? What I want to do, I can do. No, why not me? And now I ask you the question, why not you? Huh? Why not you? You can do all those things. You have complete control. But like the car and the driver, you know, the car is the car, the driver is the driver. They are separate entity. ability to control doesn't mean it's you. Understand? Because, like the car, what happens if there's no petrol? Cannot move already. Or some of the vital part, conk. Let's say battery flat. Cannot start. Or starter out. Or any of the important part within there. Even your tire can go punctured. That one is quite minor. At least it can still move. But if the vital one, it will break down. So exactly like the car. Ability to control doesn't mean it's you. No. It's when the condition is there for the car to perform that function as a car, then you can have control. Understand or not? Understand or not? Your body is the same. No. You go to the hospital, the guy who is paralyzed, you ask him to stand and see, he cannot stand. Understand or not? You ask him to walk, he cannot walk. Then you ask, that body doesn't obey him anymore. Understand or not? That's why it's not you, understand? Because there is no condition for it to perform the function like that car, understand? So all these are condition arising things. When the condition is there, it will perform the function. That is like you own, understand? It's like it belongs to you, understand? But when condition ceases to be, it doesn't listen to you anymore. That's why you know body is just a body, understand? Like the car, when the condition is not there, it's no longer able to listen to you. So you got no control over it, understand? The other aspect is, you want to get sick, it never asks you permission, understand? Correct? He never say, Ratio, I want to have stomach ache already, prepare tomorrow coming. He never tell you, understand? You have to understand it through your own consciousness. You have to feel it within. You have to have that ability, the sensitivity, the mindfulness to understand every part of it. That's why know thyself. Self-knowledge is wisdom. If you cannot understand this 5 degrees of form and mind, you don't know who you are, what you are, and you become deluded. Sakayaditi through the egoic mind. Self-delusion condition you to deludedly grasp and cling to all this aggregate of form and mind. So now you know body not you, mind not you. Understand? These two are separate entities. So the form and mind also not you, because the Buddha proved very clearly they are impermanent, lead to suffering. And because they are impermanent, it's not a permanent unchanging entity that you can call this is me, this is I. And when you don't exist, how can you own anything? Understand? That's why all these are delusion. So the first noble truth reality asks you to reflect and contemplate on this body. Understand? The first four is that this body of ours is of the nature to grow old, get sick and die. For he has not gone beyond old age, sickness and death. That is the first three reflections. Then the next two is what? Everything that we think we own, our loved one, our possession, our property, our wealth, our career, our business, everything that you hold on to dearly, they were separate from you one day. Understand? Either you go first or they go before you. When conditions is to be, when your breath stop, you don't own anything. Your identity erased, everything gone. Understand? So all Dhamma point towards the same thing. The Buddha want you to reflect, contemplate, and prepare yourself so that you don't suffer, so that you don't attach and cling to all your loved ones, your possession, your wealth, because all these they are condition arising, just like the form and mind. They come and go. Your loved one also form and mind. They come and go. You can't even own what you have, your own form and mind. How can you own another being? So that's why attachment is a delusion. It's a cause of suffering. So you attach to this form and mind, you suffer. That brings us to the second aggregate, perception. When you perceive your loved one, it becomes real. Your mind creates it. Understand? This external form enters your mind, understand? It's another form of mind, understand? But because you develop delusion, you attach, you cling, you think you give birth, they are your children, understand? You think you married, they are your spouse, understand? You think your parents give birth to you, they are your parents. I'm not denying the conventional truth of civilization, understand? But ultimate truth, There is no such thing. That's why the secret of the Dhamma is there are two aspects. The condition arising world, which we are living in, existential world. Law of karma operate. And this law of karma recognizes relationship. There is such thing as parent, such thing as loved one, such thing as all those things. But ultimate truth, you look at the Heart Sutta, there is no such thing. Because everything is anatta, anasana. Even all of form is anatta, not a permanent unchanging entity. Anasana. It cannot be eternally the same. Everything is conditionalizing, causal phenomena, subject to change, in a state of continuous flux. Never, never the same at any two instant. Even your physical body and mind, every moment, every instant, they are different. So, when you start to understand that the whole thing is in a continuous state of flux, every part is vibrating, anasana, even within this whiteboard. All the atoms, all the electrons, everything in the state of vibration, energy field. And they are ever changing, decaying, slowly, but you cannot see. Some very fast, like my voice, arise and pass away very fast. This phenomena is very fast. So you can perceive it. But certain things that is with you, like your physical body and my mind, because the change takes time, slowly, you cannot perceive it. That's why you cannot see. You become deluded by it. So whatever you perceive, you attach, like your loved one, your possession, your career, your wealth, your business, everything that you hold on to dearly, do you suffer? You definitely suffer. Right? Like your loved one, if they get sick, get old, or threaten with something, you become worried. As you have a lot of worry for them. Then because of the attachment, you emotionally affected. Then if let's say one day they separate from you, accident, death happen. Like MH370, MH17. So what is going to happen? Because of the attachment, you become afflicted, you become miserable. So whatever you perceive, you cannot attach. Even your school, your race, your whatever religion. If you hold on to them, means what? You create division. Then you say, my school better than your school. Last time when we studied, certain school, they got sports, debate. So every time we defend our school. And the other side defend their school. Because you attach to what you are associated with. You create division, then you try to fight and argue, understand? You try to compete, understand? All this bring about suffering, understand? So everything you come to perceive is the same, like certain thing. You buy new whiteboard, oh, very new, very nice. You're very happy then. If you attach, what happened? Like your new car. Suddenly, somebody's crash. But if it's your neighbor's car, you come back, you can still smile and joke and tell your neighbor sway lah. Just bought that car accident idea. Organize. Yeah, you don't pay. Then you don't attach. You don't click. That's why you can joke. You can laugh. If you pay and deludedly attach, you become afflicted. Correct. So all the aggregate is the same. Your thinking is what? Sankara. These are your views or opinion. Your religious label you carry. Your opinion of right and wrong, your views of things. You are a superstitious guy. Everything becomes like to you taboo one. You cannot do this, you cannot do that. Leslie is here, Penang one. Last time she used to tell me a lot of taboo one, Penang. The mother said, "Chicky, besides Joe, everything, when you get married, how? First day, you must do what? Then you must not have something above your head when you pass through or what? Then below, something sui, you know. You live in a flat, so many guys above you, understand? Oh, then you say, you cannot like stand above the holy image. In the flat, where you put your image, I also don't know, understand? Unless you buy the top one. They call it penthouse. She said, no money, oh. No money, stay low. And then nowhere to pay the, put the image. The image is not like that one. That's why the Buddha said, these are the object of veneration. Four objects. You know what are the four? We use to chant. Vandami chetiyang sabam. Sabatane supatititang. Saririke datu mahabohing. Buddha rupang sakalang sada. These are the four objects of veneration, the Buddha said. First one is chetiya. Okay? Second one is relic, saririke. Then mahabohing, all the great bohi trees. Then the last one is Buddha rupang. So he wants you to understand these are objects of veneration, but you don't attach, you don't cling, understand? You develop understanding so that you can develop the faith, the cultivation, so that it can benefit you, like the chetiya, understand? Chetiya is a symbol of what? Symbol of what? What does the chetiya symbolize? You see like a cone shape like that, with all the beautiful color. It actually symbolizes the great teachings of the Buddha. They are all enshrined inside that chetiya. The base that they built, you go and see. The four columns. What are they? They are the four foundations of mindfulness and the four noble truths. Understand? Then you look at the various, what they call the Rawan. Some of them, they built the noble eightfold path up. Some seven factors of enlightenment. So that is to recall to mind all the teaching. And chetiya is also a place where they actually built for great beings, understand? Where they enshrine their relics and all those things. So when you can recall to mind, develop the veneration, then develop the spiritual faculty and enable you to benefit from the cultivation, then use it. But don't go attached to a chetiya. No. Wow, crack already. Wow, the pain come out already. This is not the intention of the Buddha. Then when you come to the Bohi tree, it's the same. The relics is the same. You don't attach. You don't depend on them. But you can recall to mind. You can venerate them because these are objects of veneration that can bring forth a lot of faith, a lot of benefit, the spiritual faculty, the energy, everything. Then the Bohi tree is where the Buddha became enlightened underneath. You recall to mind the great enlightenment of Lord Buddha Sakyamuni. That gives you so much inspiration, faith, understand? That's how you make use of it. But you don't go attached to the poetry. Ah, you die already, not enough water. Huh? How come this one doesn't develop so well as Mahabohi there in India? You go and compare? Suffering. You attach, you cling, you want it your way. Poetry also must grow according to what you expect. When the tree, not enough water, dry, the leaf shed during autumn, oh, you don't like, you say, this Bohi tree not that nice anymore. Your mind fluctuates very fast. When it comes to Buddha image, also same. The Buddha said the physical body of the Buddha and the Rupang, they are just symbol, understand? The Buddha is not that thing, understand? But it is a Rupang that allow you to venerate so that you can recall to mind his great quality. What are the Buddha's great quality? His what? His embodiment of wisdom and virtue. So when you recall to mind such a great being, the wisest and the most virtuous living being ever to arise, to guide you, to be your teacher, you are very inspired. You have a lot of faith, a lot of gratitude and respect and veneration for the Buddha. That is the purpose. But if somebody go and like do something to your image and you become very, very affected, very angry and unhappy, means what? You don't understand the Dhamma. You think the Buddha is that one. You think they abuse your Buddha. There is no such thing. They are all form, symbol. They come and they go. Condition arising, cause of phenomena. So object of veneration serves purpose, but we don't attach, don't cling. So all your thinking, sankhara, is like that. When you have delusion, you will cling to rite and ritual, superstition, belief, feng shui, and all those things. And they are going to affect you, understand? Because this is what thought is capable of. dividing and create attachment, clinging. And the Buddha say what? When you attach, you suffer. How you suffer? Like your superstition. Oh, my mother say cannot know. Or that medium told me cannot know. Ayo, say lah, I step on it. Huh? Or I didn't do this, I didn't do that. So what? Your fear, your insecurity, your misery come from what? You go and worry about what people say. And you never investigate whether there is any basis or not, whether they are the truth or not. That's why just now I was sharing with Suya Mifongdeo when we had dinner. I said the most important thing that you must understand is you take care of mind take care of karma take care of you. If you don't have the karma, whatever feng shui or whatever right and ritual you do is not going to help you. If you take care of karma, that is the real one. That's why the Buddha said, all evil you must avoid. Whatever wholesomeness you must do. Dhammapada verse 183. That purify your mind to develop wisdom. That is the real advice. And the Buddha was asked, what is the highest protection for a living being? You know what the Buddha answered or not? Virtue. Sister Lian, expert in virtue, that's why she knows. Virtue is the highest protection. Virtue means what? All of your goodness, your kindness, your karma. Without good karma, you can be very clever, very intelligent, very cunning. You are not protected. Because karma, you cannot run. When condition is there, it manifests. And you cannot stop it. It cannot stop. The only thing to avoid is, for the time being, is wisdom. The moment you have wisdom, karma is very funny. Where it cannot afflict you, and where it cannot cause any suffering to you, I realize it reverses immediately. No more. Yeah. Not to say the law of karma doesn't manifest. It manifests, but because the enlightened one, especially the arahant, they are not affected. And because they are not affected, karma loses its power. Because as long as it cannot cause you any suffering or misery, it will reverse. Immediately reverse. Yeah. So all this, you will come to understand as you cultivate and develop that understanding yourself. Now what is important is, this sharing will show you the way, understand or not? Point out to you all the important pointers. It's just like the Buddha Dharma. The Buddha lay out all the essential teaching to let you understand this, that these are the truth that points towards enlightenment. When you understand them, you cultivate accordingly, you will realize them. But the problem is, over the 2,000 years, all this that was passed down was verbal, understand or not? Through chanting. And through chanting, you know, what they have preserved is already very wonderful. But all the explanation you cannot chant on, understand or not? Like what I explained to you, this 1 hour plus or 2 hour, you commit to chanting and see? Cannot, isn't it? Correct or not? Yeah, it's not the same, understand or not? Not like puja, repeat on. This one is in a state of flux. No? Every moment, every instant, different. Everybody is different. Every condition is different. Everywhere, every place is all different. So because of that, the explanation, the wisdom part, you cannot pass down. That's why you have to walk the path yourself and realize it yourself. The Buddha cannot give you wisdom. If it can be given, you think he is not kind enough and not compassionate enough. He is the most compassionate living being ever to arise. And yet he cannot do it. He can only show you the way and teach you how to do it. And you have to really strive on your heedfulness and do yourself. Otherwise, why he says strive on your heedfulness? Otherwise, he says believe in me, when you die, you follow me. Then you will be in the kingdom of whatever. It's so easy, no need to do good. Last minute, change religious label. Then you are already destined for enlightenment. So, last one is the same. Consciousness. Everything that you become conscious of, you attach and cling, what happens? You suffer. You become afflicted, miserable. Just like what we went through. When you become conscious of things, if your mind don't attach, that consciousness is beautiful, understand? That's why you can enjoy all of the beauty and wonders of life, understand? You can actually experience them with your full awareness and consciousness. It's so beautiful, understand? That moment you commit to memory and want it repeated, that is where your suffering comes, understand? The moment you accumulate them, like all your scars of memory, all your good and bad moments, understand? Then when the condition arrives, you will recall to memory, understand? Then you become either attached, sensual desire, or you develop fear, worry, anxiety, insecurity, and unhappiness. Because when you recall through heedlessness, it becomes a problem. Because you attach, you cling, and you have fear. Because your whole of memory is what? All of your accumulated memory of what? All your scars of memory, good and bad, pleasant and unpleasant. So what happened? You have this insecurity all inside your memory as well. You have seen how people cheat you, how the snatchers threaten everybody. Then sometimes you yourself also cheat and deceive others, and how you cause suffering to other beings. So all this memory makes you very, very what? Insecure. So your insecurity comes out. That's why you want to preempt. Sometimes you hear motorbike, whoa, you panic. You say snatch thief coming. So acting according to memory is not acting at all. This is attachment to consciousness. You become conscious through memory. That's why thought is response to memory. So when thought is response to memory without heedfulness, without understanding, without the panya, that understand the characteristic, these five aggregate of form and mind will be very powerful. They have power over you. Okay? So now we finish the first aspect. Now we go to the second aspect. The Buddha said there is another aspect of the five aggregate of form and mind where the rupa, this rupa, the first aspect is physical form. Understand? Physical form. Second aspect is not. What is second aspect? Mental form. Understand? Mental form. Second aspect is mental form. What are mental form? All of external form, external phenomenal world, they are external, understand? Not your physical body anymore, understand? How you bring them into your mind, like this Buddha image, how you bring it into your mind, through what? Perception. Your senses, your aggregate of perception, when you perceive, this external form enters the mind. So now you listen. You have a consciousness, okay? The knowing element, understand? But there is no one to know, understand? It can arise, the awareness. Then as the aggregate come out, it's like somebody knowing, understand? But there is no one to know. It's just a knowing, understand? So the knowing mind knows something. The thing that the mind knows is the form in the mind. Can follow that? The mind that perceives, whatever it perceives, is the form in the mind, understand? All the external form that you perceive mentally is the form in the mind. So the second aspect is mental form. So all of mental form that enter mind, you attach and cling, you also suffer. So it's exactly the same as just now we talked about perception. Your loved one, your possession, whatever external form that you become conscious of, you are able to perceive and bring it into mind. That's why you think, you become miserable, fearful, depressed. It's all because of external form. You attach to them, you cling onto them, you hold onto them, you give so much meaning to them. Understand? And even your idea. All of sankhara, your views, your opinion, your religious belief, all these ideas, when you perceive them through the perception and you cling onto them as your idea, as your views and opinion, you suffer like anything. Understand? You become miserable. So the second aspect is the important one. This one is what the Buddha talked about under the dependent origination, the dwelling. Yeah? The dwelling, you got the first two is what? Yeah? Avijja, paccaya, sankara. Sankara, paccaya. Very good. Wow, not bad. Vijnanang. Then vijnanang, paccaya. Vijnanang, sorry. This namarupa, wait, this namarupa, this one is the five aggregate of form and mind, understand? This one is not a human being, understand? the book on three period of lifetime one, they call this as the human being, understand? Which is the first aspect. Not wrong also, because it happened once in three lifetime. If the Buddha teach that type of dependent, that origination got used or not? Yeah? I myself teach you biology once in three lifetimes. This one, every moment, every instant it arises. And I thought, this is the real dependent origination. The Buddha said, dependent on ignorance. Yeah? Because you don't have the right view, you don't understand truth. You develop ignorance. So, one thing to know, one thing to experience, what you do. You go and think. You know. In school also say, I don't understand. Go back and think about it. So, dependent on ignorance, because you don't understand, you arise sankara. Sankara is mental activity, thinking. And mind is an organ. Understand? Correct? So, the organ, upon contact, what happened? The light bulb light up, isn't it? You become conscious, isn't it? So, avijja paccaya sankara. So when you think, you make contact, you arise mental consciousness. Understand not? This mental consciousness, before you put in the content, is not namarupa yet. Understand not? It's just pure awareness, pure consciousness without its content. Understand? This one, the enlightened being, see things as they are, like that one. Understand not? But the moment you input the content through your mental intention, everything, the seven universal, everything go in, with all the content of consciousness, your like and dislike, or your wrong view, or whatever, wholesome, unwholesome, then this one becomes the five mental aggregate of form and mind. So this is the one you have to understand. This is the one that you need to realize. Then if it has got no more power over you, this one will cease here. Avijja no more, you don't think. When you don't think, you seldom think, you don't make contact with mind. That's why they seldom have any type of consciousness that will condition namarupa. They have pure awareness. They just aware. Don't need to think. And the consciousness that arises is natural, nature's law. Upon contact, the pure consciousness come out. Then they don't create this or not. Even if they create, it's pure aggregate. The five aggregate of form and mind, they are pure aggregate. Then the Buddha said, dependent on this five aggregate of form and mind, you must have salayatana. Huh? Your sixth sense. Salayatana. This one is your sixth sense basis. Because without the sense basis, you cannot trigger of consciousness, understand? Then because if there is no consciousness, you cannot have form and mind, the five mental aggregate. So what happens is, upon contact of mind, if you don't have wisdom, avijja here already contact, understand? Understand? So ignorant contact condition mental activity. That's how you can think. Then you make mental contact, you arise mental consciousness, understand? Can be from any of your senses. Then this mental consciousness, you input content, this one come out. Then the Buddha tell you, without the sense basis, all this cannot happen. That's why when a living being die, there is no this thing. Yeah. Then what happened is, once you have sense basis, the Buddha say, upon contact, consciousness will arise. And within that content of consciousness that you input, the seven universal, one of them is feeling inside. That's why upon contact, feeling arise. But dependent origination is not one dimension, Anasana. It's multi-dimension. So when you do daily mindfulness, when your sati is very stable, when your mind is silent, you see all these things happening inside you. And all the links are very clear. Not a theory anymore. Then you know, upon contact, consciousness, I become conscious first. But there is no person inside there. It's like the physical experiment. You put on the switch, the light bulb light up. It becomes conscious. That's why the Buddha said, in the seeing, is only the seeing consciousness. No one to see. Understand? Can follow? Just that consciousness. But the trouble is, sakayaditi there, what happened? Associate with the seeing. I see. Die already. Understand? When the eye come out, egoic mind, all this become grasping. Understand? That's why you associate with your form, your mind, your aggregate. Then you say, I see. I smell, I taste, I feel, I think, therefore I am. So this is what the dependent origination is all about. I just finished out the last one. The traditional teaching, they cannot explain it this way. Because, I don't know, maybe they didn't do the real meditation. What they teach is very logical one, as or not. When you die, what happens? Because you are not enlightened yet, there is ignorant, it condition what? Sankara is called karmic volition. You create karmic volition. So this one will condition your next rebirth consciousness. They say this one rebirth consciousness. And then you are born. Then because you are born, there is six sense basis. And because six sense basis, there is feeling. It condition craving the whole dependent. Oh, like that explain very easy, right? Very logical, right? Correct, no? Then everybody don't complain, right? You know, nobody understand a better way. But you ask yourself, is this helpful? Three lifetime, no? Die, then start here, then born, then live and die again, no? Three lifetime happen one time. That type of dependent origination. Patijasamupada. Useful. You cannot learn. You cannot meditate on it also. But the second one that I explained to you is every moment, every instant of contact. Every moment of mind contact. If there is ignorance, this one will move. Then when you input all this, these are mental five aggregate of form and mind. Every moment, every instant it arises. This one is useful. This one you can develop understanding. You can see how your mind stir. When you input the wrong content, when you don't have wisdom, yoniso manasikara, sankara will move. And when it moves, you cannot cut a feeling. Because there is delusion, there is craving. So feeling can never remain as pure feeling without wisdom. It will automatically be conditioned into craving. That's why you suffer. You cannot run. Your sensual desire, evil, is part of your greed and hatred. That's why you keep on arising, like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience. All this leads to duality, leads to suffering. All these are attachment, like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant. Okay? So tonight, I hope it is more clear. You don't have to remember. It's recorded. Okay? Slowly reflect, contemplate. Listen to it when you have the time. Yeah? Actually, what has been shared is already more than enough for you. You only need to spend time slowly, slowly. Listen to it and develop the clearness. That's why the first phase, pariyatti, develop it well. Spend time on it. When you understand, the meditation becomes very simple. You will actually progress very fast. Okay? So we end. Ya sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we will do the sharing of merits. Transfer merits. And after that, you invoke the, what they call, blessing for the nation. Then after that, we make our aspiration. Sorry, tonight no Q&A, not enough time. Okay, sharing merits to the devas. Akka sata cha bumata devanaga mahindika ปุญญังตังอนุโมทิตวาจิรังรักขันตุโลกาสาสนะ May all beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power, share this merit, and may they long protect the dispensation. Itta vata ca amehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya. May all beings share this merit which we have thus acquired, and may all devas rejoice. And may it contribute greatly to their well-being and happiness. Okay, transform marriage to departed one. Idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Let these merits accrue to all departed ones and departed relatives, and may they all to be well and happy always. Okay, we will invoke the blessing for the nation. Devo vasadkalena sasa sampati heto cha fito bhavat loko cha raja bhavat dhammiko. May the rain fall in due season. May there be a rich and good harvest throughout. May the world be prosperous and peaceful always. May the government of the day, the king and the rulers be righteous. Okay, we will do our aspiration. Ipmina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawan nivana patiya. By the grace of this merit that we have thus acquired, may we never follow the foolish and the heedless, but only the wise and the enlightened one, until Nibbana is realized. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Keep your respect mindfully to Lord Buddha.